Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the December edition of our Care Partner Meetup. I'm Polly Dawkins, Executive Director of the Davis Finney Foundation, and I am here with our panelists that join us every month, who I will introduce in a minute. And Kathleen Christ is back here again. We'll introduce Kathleen as well. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce or reintroduce Connie Carpenter-Finney.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for showing up. It's December. I love December because it means it's almost January, which means it's almost the days get longer. So I'm happy about that. but anyway, that welcome and really 100% thanks for showing up. I'm here again with Gail Gitton from Boulder, our Master Ambassador for the Davis Finney Foundation in the care partner space, and Pat Donahue, who is graciously sitting in his car in the parking lot of his school in order to slip away and get a few minutes with us. And Pat's in Las Vegas, and I want to let everyone know that he's only here for the first little bit of the webinar today because he has to get back into his kids in the school. So thank you, Pat.
And
of course, we've got a special guest, Kathleen Christ. And if you've been with us before, you know that last year we actually had her come on twice because she's just such a font of information and just so well balanced in her advice. And we appreciate you so much, Kathleen, coming from Houston today, coming live from Houston. And, you know, I'll let you tell a little bit about yourself, but I know you're a licensed social worker, but that's, you know, which gives you a little credibility and, of course, a lot of information background. But where you really get it is in the trenches, because you're the executive director of the Houston Area Parkinson's Society. So I don't know if you want to add to that. I'm so happy you're here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great to be back. These are always fantastic discussions, and I think I learn more from you guys than you all learn from me. But yeah, I mean, I've spent 23 going into my 24th year here at Houston Area Parkinson's Society, and my background is in social work. That's where I spent the first 17 years of my career here, just working exclusively with people with Parkinson's, their family members, and related disorders as well. But I also have a family caregiving connection. I was my grandmother's primary care giver. She had Alzheimer's, and now my mother has an Alzheimer's diagnosis. And so I'm doing some long distance caregiving there. But as the executive director, I get to choose what I do. And so I still do a lot of support groups and work one-on-one with individuals and families, which is kind of where my first love is.
So I'm going to throw it to you, Pat, to maybe talk about how you're doing and this notion of downsizing your job.
Downsizing the job. You know, I downsized my job 10, 12 years ago to become a school teacher. I left my career in advertising and went back to college, got a master's degree in special education. Now I'm teaching special education at a middle school, high school, elementary school, but right now I'm working with middle school students. And now it's coming to a point where I need to spend more time at home. One of the things that I'm looking at is maybe working with our students and that are homebound in the coming year. And so that might give me, they're saying that may give me more time to work from home, as well as creating my own schedule, working with students at their homes or even Starbucks. And the caveat to it is that they say that I'll be able to take my wife with me as a volunteer. So Sydney would be able to also work and do that but as a volunteer basis. So that's something we're pursuing. I let them know that that's what I want to do if they want to keep me. They want to keep me, but if they want me to stay.
I love, let me just stop you there, because I love how you're renegotiating your situation. And I know it's not easy to do, right? But it's, you know, it's an imperative for you, because your wife, as those of you who are regular listeners know, Sid has had a real struggle these last couple of years, just finding some stasis, you know, some kind of balance. Kathleen, do you have experience with this in your practice with your constituents?
Yeah, I mean, finding the balance is probably the most challenging thing. You know, figuring out your own needs as a care partner, figuring out the needs of the person that you're caring for, and being able to, you know, check all the important boxes, and knowing, you know, trying to sort between the demands, the things, you know, that you want to prioritize, but also the things that fill you up. And for a lot of us, that's work. You know, because you, if you love what you do and you enjoy it and there's meaning in that, then, you know, great way to figure out, you know, how to still prioritize that while also meeting the demands that you're experiencing at home. Not easy to do.
No, but it's I see light, and I see as we push through it, I see light in the opportunities. Whether it, you know, there's lots of different opportunities that I for myself, because I'll need to continue to work. I can't. I'm gonna quasi-retire, but at the same time, I'm gonna still work. And whether it's next year, you know, this next school year, or the school year after that. Somehow I need to continue working. You know, Parkinson's kind of took a big chunk of time out of our earning career for Sydney. So we, you know, we're not at the same place as some people are that get diagnosed later in life. Sydney was 47 when she was diagnosed, and so on. But that light, I gotta tell you, she had knee surgery. She's gonna start getting injections into her knee to replace the there's no cartilage on one side of her knee, and so that's causing her some issues. But they put her in a brace, and she's riding her recumbent bike now without the chain falling off. So we're very excited about that. In fact, I put her on our tandem, and we rode the cul-de-sac in the tandem. And neighbors came out of their homes and threw their arms up in the air when they saw her do that. So it was amazing.
Yeah, it's such an important step, and I really applaud your capacity for, you know, helping to keep her going, and for your neighbors stepping up and showing up too. You know, this is easy, right? And it's so easy to isolate yourself when you have Parkinson's, and you know, not get out there and do these things that you used to take for granted, right? And there she is, just celebrating, just you know, the smallest. You know,
There.
step, and yet it's a huge step forward. So, wow, that's fabulous. But you got a lot on your plate, Pat. So,
Well, I'm not, it's not about me, you know. It's about everybody else and what she's going through. But yeah, it should be about
stop
us,
you
right,
right there.
Connie?
So, can I just stop? So, is it a when is it about the care partner, Kathleen?
At the point of diagnosis? I mean, it's a unit, right? If we're looking at things, you know, if we're looking at things, you know, you can't help but be affected, even if it's, you know, even if it's on a small scale, you can't help but be affected when someone that you love is diagnosed with any kind of chronic illness. And so I think, you know, in different ways, perhaps, but point of diagnosis on. And probably before diagnosis, because as you all know, you were seeing things and experiencing things and dealing with things in the years ahead of that before you got to that official, you know, words and charts. And so, yeah, it's okay. It's okay. You don't have to undersell, and it's okay to pat yourself on the back as a care partner and to say, yeah, I'm in it too, because you are.
I
So.
have fun saying it's not about me, because there's a gentleman in Washington, Charlie, who always he and I go back and forth. Hey, it's not about us, you know, we're taking care of our wives. But in reality, it is about all of us, and how we work together, and that partnership that Sydney and I have, as well as other people as we come across, so we build partnerships wherever we go. We have 100 plus people on here. I feel like we have a partnership with today, and you know, we're all in this together,
But this
and
is
so.
so important to consider, and I love the notion that from the time of diagnosis, because so often, you know, that neurologist is not looking at you and saying, giving you tips, you the care partner. Some are, but very few. Mostly it's focused on, what medication, what further testing needs to be done, and come back in 6 months. And you're like, what? And everything changes. And even if it's changing slowly, it changes. It's so important to acknowledge that. Thank you, Kathleen, for saying that it's at the point of diagnosis. I think that's an important consideration. So it is about you too, Pat, because you have stayed strong through this, but you've also had, some huge challenges yourself.
Yes. Well, it's a, like I said, I love roller coasters. I didn't expect this ride. It has a lot of fun times and a lot of scary, crazy times, but it is a roller coaster ride, and so we're on it and we're having fun and we're getting through it when it's tough. And I encourage all of us to do the same, even when
It's, there's a great sort of analogy or metaphor, I don't know what it is, a story about, at the time of diagnosis, it's sort of like you've gotten on the plane to go to a vacation and you've had this vacation spot picked out. Let's say it's some remote island in the middle of the Pacific, and you get on that plane with your partner or your parent or whoever it is, and you're so excited to finally get this vacation. And then you land in, and I don't mean to diss on Holland, but let's just say you land in Amsterdam where it's cold and gray and drizzling. Your destination has completely changed. You are no longer able to go to your remote, warm and sunny island. And so what you do is you say, well, I've never been here before. Let's look around, right, and see what we have. And we find out that we're actually in a really cool place with a really cool culture, and there's lots to do. But we also have to go out and buy ourselves a warm coat and, put the sunscreen away. So, this is kind of all the rocky terrain that we're all on, right, where we don't know where we're headed. And I think that's hard. And I wonder too, Kathleen, we talk sometime on here about I don't know what's the term for the anticipatory grief, the kind of negative thinking that it's easy to embrace when you are in these situations and how to work out of it.
I think most of us are kind of hardwired to want to feel like we're planning or to feel like we're prepared. There's an interesting book out there called Hardwiring Happiness, and it kind of talks about how we're programmed. Like if we're walking in the jungle and we hear leaves rustling, like we're not thinking like, oh, but that's like a beautiful group of butterflies flying off. We think, oh, that's probably a jaguar or something that's going to leap down and tear us to shreds. And so we're a little bit more programmed that way. I think that's kind of our survival mechanism that kicks in how we view things. But if you don't, I think if you don't really stay on top of that, then it can lead you into a more negative path where where you kind of spend a lot of energy worrying about stuff that may or may not happen, instead of putting, focusing your energy on more of the presence, and what you're, kind of what you're dealing with and the challenges that you're going through now. I mean, that doesn't mean that you have to stick your head in the sand and go, we're not going to think about anything that may come in the future. But it's, I think, again, it just kind of goes back to that balance of balancing the energy in a place and in a space that, makes it manageable, where you are prepared, but not scared.
Yeah, I like that, prepared but not scared. Gail, we haven't heard from you.
Well, I'm
Mentioned.
listening in. I'm listening in. I've been working as a mentor for someone for quite a while, and I don't know how this fits in exactly, but the demand she's putting on herself this holiday season, I'm sure she's done it on all the other holiday seasons. She told me what she was doing besides having company and preparing this and preparing that. And so many of us want to go back in time to create what brought us all that happiness. And then we find out that it was a stupid decision. We all need to just scale down on what we can possibly do. When I heard what she was doing, I was just like, oh my goodness. Of course, it was very stressful on the company and everything. And I'm wondering, why are we as caregivers not realizing how much work and stress were added to our lives in trying to make things like they were when everyone was helpful?
Trying to
And
make things perfect.
because we're trying to recapture something that, and at the end, it becomes even worse than a lovely experience that the holiday could bring. I don't know if that what that had to do with this
Well,
conversation.
what are your thoughts on that, Kathleen? Do you experience that, trying to talk people off the perfectionist or trying to make it like it was,
Yeah,
Lynch?
it's amazing that so far I've yet to meet someone who's actually perfect. There are some people real close, and people who probably grade themselves on the high end of things, but no one that's actually perfect. And so, so that's it's a huge amount of pressure, but there is this nostalgia for happier, healthier, times, right? And we go back and we look. I mean, even those of us who aren't dealing with chronic illness on a daily basis try to recreate wonderful memories that we've had or memories that we think we had, from times before when life seemed to be whatever our definition was at that time of better. And so, I think it's just kind of a natural desire to want to go back. I mean, they're and create things the way they were, that search for normalcy, that idea that maybe if we can recreate that feeling. I think we've all learned that you can never recreate that feeling. Those feelings that you have in those moments are very organic and very genuine. And I'm trying to think back to a time in my entire life where I've been able to recreate that exact same feeling, and it's never I've never been able to do that. And so I think that's the reach, right? It we're thinking we're not trying to create some dark, sad, depressing time. It's always the reach for something that's happier, that's brighter, that's warmer, that feels cozier or more comfortable. And so I think that is just, I think a lot of people are just inclined to want to do that. And I think that we also, I think many of us who identify as caregivers or care partners, also just have this idea that we can accomplish and conquer anything we set our minds to. And sometimes that's like taking a bite bigger, bigger than what you can chew. And so it's, I feel like that's just a really common experience to want to one recreate something happy and wonderful, but also just thinking that we can accomplish all of this stuff before we realize that we get in over our heads and go, wow, okay.
Yeah,
That
and maybe
was.
to to forgive yourself in anticipation of maybe reaching a little too far,
Right.
right?
Well, I think we need to sit down with ourselves and say, okay, I understand what we're trying to accomplish, but let's see if we can accomplish it in a much more lean fashion or with more help or in a way that it's realistic. We have to, all of us are getting old, so we have to balance the realistic aspect of it. And everything sounds wonderful until you start unpacking the groceries. And then you look at all this stuff you bought and all these things, and you only have one oven, and how are you going to put everything in one oven? And then, and then you find out you're having house guests. So,
And
and
that's at which point your brain explodes.
and then of course, then you suffer. I keep on telling people that as you add stress to yourself, you're taking away years of health. So, Yeah.
Yeah, worry is a strain on your whole system. And so that's why even just these little, take a breathing and exercise break, and then contemplate after you've done that, then contemplate what your choices are, and maybe even make a list of what are the choices I have for this holiday or for this trip that will help me minimize the load. But you know what, Polly, we have a ton of questions in the chat, and I'm wondering what's most suitable to ask of Kathleen at this time.
The questions for Kathleen are the ones that we have here. Cindy asks, any suggestions for how to maintain joy when your loved one is overwhelmed with apathy and depression? And she says, I'm finding it difficult to be as attentive and supportive as I want to be and not feel swallowed by his darkness.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean that's a very difficult thing, because a lot of times it's very easy to feed off of the mood and the energy and the tone of people around us. And so, there are, you can do your best to try to help people with their depression or their anxiety or their apathy, by acknowledging their feelings. Trying not to internalize that in a way that helps or that helps contribute to a darker mood or darker place for yourself. And I think then you have to really assess, last time and probably every time I've talked about journaling, but assess what it is that brings you joy and then figure out what are the little daily, bites. It doesn't have to be like, get on a plane and go somewhere exotic and hang out on the beach for, 3 weeks. It can be just little bites of joy if there's something there that you can infuse into your daily life. And sometimes, and everyone's situation is very different. Some people are dealing with advanced physical impairment or mental health impairment or cognitive decline. Advanced age, whatever, other health issues. So everyone's circumstances are different, but in general, right, is if you assess the situation as well, maybe there's a place where you can step back and find this, moment to do a little bit of a kind of different breathing. But also, setting your expectations. Gail mentioned something earlier about like we're all getting older. Yep. And if we're lucky, we keep getting older. And but there is a hard, that's a hard pill for a lot of us to swallow, that change is uncomfortable, and most of us don't feel comfortable with that, and so we have to adjust what our expectations are, and sometimes even that can help bring joy. We were today talking about sending holiday cards, and I said I quit doing that like 4 years ago because as I was spending so much stress like getting my son to get the pictures and picking out the card and figuring out the wording and stuffing the envelopes and writing the things and stamping. And I was like, what am I spending? I'm the only one doing this. And this has cost me like $500. And that was like the greatest amount of freedom that I had felt in so long when the next year I was like, forget this. We're not doing it.
Yep.
Carry everything.
So
Happy
that's such
Thanksgiving.
a
Move
great
on.
example. Yeah, great example of letting go, right?
Kind
And
of give
so,
give it kind of give everyone a blessing to not have to do that this
yeah.
year.
So, well, no, I'll give you a prescription to let go
Right.
and just let it go. Nobody cares. Nobody remembers a
I
lot
was
of things.
Kathleen, I was thinking about what you're talking about, joy. I think one of the problems about being a caregiver is you don't allow yourself the extra time to maintain your social circle of friends. You give yourself a pass not to connect with this person or that person. But I think the biggest joy is getting together with girlfriends or male friends, whoever it is, and that gives you great joy. And I'm afraid that so many of us leave behind those connections because we think, well, we don't have time for that. I think that's the most important part of our lives.
Gail, that gave me goosebumps, you're saying that, because I was just thinking about that this morning. Like, I have to schedule time for friends, and so often that's the first thing that then goes off the calendar, right? And it's so important. And we're going to talk about that more next month too, because we're going to have a specialist in social isolation talking to us. But it's so important and it's a priority. But I like kind of the prescription that we're getting from Kathleen here is to go back to, last year when she was here, she said, one of the number one things you can do for yourself is to journal. I come from an elite athlete background, endurance athlete. So I'll tell you the most important thing you can do is take a breath. But let's combine those two. For time for yourself is to just take a few breaths, write a few things down, write the angry things down, write the good things down, and then go back and review those later. That's for you. And then distill that. It's sort of like making gin, I guess. I don't know. I've never made gin, but let the little drops come out that are helpful and useful, and then mine those. And for sure, Gail, staying with your friends, resisting the temptation to be isolated is so important. And if it means you have to get someone in to help your person with Parkinson's, do it. And it's also people ask a lot of times, like, how do I get time for myself? And you have to start early in that process, even if you don't think you need it now. Make sure that your partner's friends or your parents' friends know that you need their help, and teach them how to help. And some of it is just that whole thing of showing up and sitting on the couch with your person so you can get out, see your friends, take a walk with your friends, go to an exercise class with your friends. And you don't have to talk about your person with Parkinson's. You can choose not to do that. That's another thing I would advise. When you're out with your friends, talk about the things you like to talk about, whether it's your children or the weather or, something, a book you've read, okay? Those are my suggestions and my prescription that I'm hearing from both my great ladies here, Kathleen and Gail, and are reinforcing that. Yeah. Other questions,
Yeah,
Kelly?
Amy asks, what strategies have been helpful to get to know your person better with the changes they are going through while honoring them and your grief at the same time?
Kathleen.
Well, communication is going to be key, right? And figuring out if the earlier you can start with that, and really acknowledging what people feel, it's okay to say, yeah, that really sucks. I'm sorry that you're going through that. To say, even if they have to hear tough things about, I feel like, I appreciate you as a care partner, but I feel like you're taking over my life, or whatever, being able to have honest, open discussion without kind of that judgment, or without each of you internalizing, but really wanting to know how a person feels. I mean, every person that, every care partner that we talk to, or professional caregiver that, that we work with, interns, students, we say, to ask someone to tell you about their Parkinson's. Don't make assumptions based on what you've read, based on the previous person with Parkinson's that you've met, but find out. I mean, find out. What, tell me how this affects you. It's not just, I can see your tremor if that's what it is, or I see you're moving slowly, but certainly you've got to feel a certain way. Like, what is it like to live with this every day? And if you can have those conversations, I think that it helps level the playing field a little bit. It's also okay for care partners or caregivers to say, I'm committed and I'm here for you. I'm also scared and I'm sad. I'm worried, we'll just take every day as it comes, reassure each other that way. But I think really hearing, social workers have this great start where the person is theory, and so that's where you both can start, is where you are in this process, and go from there. I mean, that's a lot of change for both people, for everyone involved, but to try to navigate through with communication, I think is most helpful.
Recently I was with a gentleman who had Parkinson's and his wife, and she got very emotional because he hadn't been diagnosed for too long, but they had actually cared for his father, who also had Parkinson's, in their home to the end of his life. And at the time, her husband had not been diagnosed. And, her reaction to that was how unfair it was for her, which is a really fair reaction, because she'd already seen the full handwriting on the wall. But I remember reminding her just what you're saying, Kathleen, which is like, your husband's Parkinson's is not his dad's Parkinson's. I don't know, just remember that and that helps you keep hope, that when you do go on the internet or when you do go to a group and you see people with very advanced Parkinson's, if your person is not in that situation, give yourself hope to believe that their prognosis or your future will be better or easier or lighter, or at least that you're informed to what may possibly be coming. But it's just so different person to person, and it's the way we care and the way we meet. Caring is so different person to person. I had a parent also with a neurological disease, so I was very sensitive to how my children would react. My mom was diagnosed with MS when I was 5, and I think I had sort of a false confidence of how well I could manage my husband's Parkinson's to begin with, right? Because I didn't understand that much about it. And he was so young. But, we all come with something from our background that either gives us strength or scares us.
Yeah.
And we do have to communicate about it. And it will change. That's the only thing we know. And we all change, which to your point, Gail, we're all getting older, thankfully, because if we weren't, we wouldn't be here. So, yeah, really appreciate those comments.
I have a couple of hard questions now, harder.
Okay.
Ahead of today, we received an email from Sue, who said that her husband is 70 years old, was diagnosed 5.5 years ago, and she said she's feeling a lot of grief and anger as he becomes more and more helpless and dependent. It's sad and lonely, and her adult child isn't helpful. How do I deal with this and maybe find a counselor who understands? Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Counselor, friend, support groups. That's what's available to us. Support groups are wonderful. I really can't say enough about them. And I stay with the support group, even though most of you know my husband passed away now 4 years. Those support groups just are, it's like having a sister, a close sister, or if you're male, a close brother that you can just share anything with, and it's just a relief to get it off your chest.
Yeah, I think it's really important to reach out. And if you don't live in an area where you can go in person, which of course that's always, the best option, then you have options like this or options where you're actually interacting face to face. And you just have to keep trying to look for that and find the right fit. It's not easy. But there are also other, what do you tell people, Kathleen, in your circle? You live in a very large city, and I'm sure a lot of people feel pretty disconnected from family, and are struggling in a similar way to this, to Sue, who asked the question.
Yeah, resentment and grief are such complicated emotions, right? But they're signals they're signals that our bodies are giving us on that we need to figure out ways to respond versus react. And so, there are ways that we can respond to that. I mean, certainly being able to share some of that grief with someone, therapists are incredibly helpful, although my experience, at least even here in a very large metropolitan area, we don't really have many options in terms of people who understand Parkinson's and some of the nuances associated with that. But being able to talk about the grief and the loss, and it's not just grief of a person, that you're experiencing. It's loss of your identity. It's grief of your future or the picture that your brain is painting of your future. And you know, it's also about getting some, if you can, some space and some guidance on figuring out, you know, are there ways that you can take back some of that time? Are there ways that you can help empower a person a little bit more, you know, in order to do some things for themselves or to be more involved, engaged, and a part of things, so that they don't they don't feel so helpless. You don't feel as though they are so helpless. And for some people, that's just those cards are off the table. That's not even something that we can discuss. But if there's, you know, if there's some type of support system, if this person lives in Texas, they're welcome to contact us, because you know, we'll help anyone, and you know, and can do more in-depth social work type things in the state of Texas, because that's where we're licensed. But you know, I think that you know, if you can find people to connect to, and sometimes it may not necessarily be Parkinson's related, but it's kind of goes back to that scheduling some of your time, and about meeting your needs, which I know feels so counterintuitive to caregivers because our focus is on someone else, but you know, you really do. It's like I said before, I mean, it's a unit. It's a system, and that whole system has to be supported. It's always disappointing when you have adult children that can't be a part of things, because they don't want to be a part of things. And so, you know, I'm not a fan of dragging anyone kicking and screaming. So I say that's fine. You can either meet them where they are and figure out how they can provide some peripheral help to you. You know, but I think you really have to, if loneliness and isolation, which is very easy to creep in, you know, starts to creep in, then you do actually have to go seek that out. And sometimes it's if you work on if you can pick, right? Now we do lots of therapy online, telehealth therapy. And so you don't even have to leave the house. And so you don't have to schedule time away or schedule, you know, someone to be there while you're not there. So there are little things that you can, you know, kind of set in terms of priorities and figuring out, you know, what you want to start with. But talking to someone about that grief, is really important. And then, you know, working on the isolation, which I think will also help feed some of that other, you know, some of the other stuff. But the grief piece, I mean, sometimes you have to just take a step back and look at the situation and go, okay, wait, we can actually make some changes here.
Yeah, I don't think, I like that. That empowers you to find other alternatives, right? It's like being at a fork in the road, maybe multi, you know, road intersection where you're like, I don't know which way to go here. And there might not be any right way, but there are options, you know, to try to find more support. And I think too, it's really important to just, you know, keep building your community. And your community changes, you know, when you are diagnosed, and some of you listening, I'm sure, are newly diagnosed. And don't be afraid to meet other people with Parkinson's and their care partners, because we learn so much from each other. And there are so many brave people out there navigating this with relative ease. You know, it's not easy for anyone, but some make it look a little easier than others, and you can kind of mine their wisdom. And even be a support person for them, because those that are even navigating easily need your support, as you do too. And you may not think you need support now, but you will. So start to build that, you know. And for those of you really stuck in a hard place, I think to Kathleen's point is just sort of stop, assess, and if you have to, start screaming for help from local organizations and local groups, and just say, like, don't underestimate the power of other people's ability to come and help you. People like Gail, who are mentors in this space, who have, you know, walked the walk, are invaluable. And she's available on our website. She's an ambassador, so you can connect with her and some of our other care partner ambassadors, at least even by email, and they may know, they may have options for you to help you out. So keep reaching out. Don't be afraid.
Right. And I would also say, don't underestimate the power of a friend who knows nothing about Parkinson's, right? And maybe that's a stranger. Maybe that starts with a knitting club or just a wine tasting. That's not the best coping mechanism, but coffee tasting. I don't know. Right. No judgment. But sometimes it's great just to, if you really need to just take a break from Parkinson's, that's okay too. It's okay to just find someone who knows nothing about it, someone where you would welcome a conversation about politics or religion, because it's not Parkinson's and you just need a little bit of a Parkinson's break. So that too is okay. And you don't even have to ever bring up the word Parkinson's in any of the things that you discuss with this person. It's just about connecting.
Yeah, great advice, Gail.
I want to bring up the fact that we're all now pretty Zoom savvy. There are so many things that you can do online. I mean, very often, oh, I have my grandkids and I give them art lessons. I go online and look up art for kids or projects, and you can learn how to do anything, things you've never even thought of doing. And but you gotta take the effort. You have to take the initiative, and do it. Not just say, "I wish I could." Just do it. You can take up a language. I mean, there's everything out there. You could start doing videos or talk yourself. But since I'm an artist, you can't believe what's out there. Even for people who'd never thought that they're creative, they make it so easy. And sit down in a room, and if you can steal some time and just let your mind go focus totally on what you're doing, it'll be a big relief, and you can continue with it. And maybe someday your piece will be hanging in the Metropolitan Museum. But when I give art classes, oh, that's the other thing. Look for these things. But you can't do it if you're just sitting on the couch. You have to talk yourself into the fact that it's not going to come to you. You have to search it out yourself. And with all the tools we have now, it's very, very possible. Just force yourself to get started, and you'll be very happy that you did that. And that's for yourself. If you don't want to be angry, and you don't want to be resentful, and you don't want to be, feel depressed, then you've got to do something for yourself that you can feel you're gaining something out of that, not just be a caregiver.
Yeah, don't label yourself, don't box yourself into a corner. Is that one way to look at it? But it's true, and it does take some resources. And I think when you're feeling really depressed and really in that black space, it's very hard to lift your head up and see what's out there. And that's where maybe a good friend comes in, where you can at least conspire with them to find some options for you, for yourself. But you have to be able to You have to be willing and able to ask for help. And I think it gets frustrating. And I've seen some of those questions in the chat too, when your person with Parkinson's becomes belligerent and they refuse to go to physical therapy. They refuse to, they're not following the doctor's orders. And you feel so helpless because, when they choose, when they make bad decisions, who pays the price? Everyone does. And so this is the time when we really urge people to reach out to their doctors and let them know, most practices have some sort of portal that you can send questions, queries, or updates and find out what's going on. Sometimes it's medication-based and the medication needs to be changed or can be altered to help your person cooperate more or feel better, because when they're not following doctor's orders, it's probably because they don't feel good and they might not be able to articulate that to you. And I don't, as much as I know my person with Parkinson's, after all these years, decades, I don't know what it feels like to live in his body. And we have to acknowledge that. I do not know what it feels like. I can see, I can tell when you're anxious. I can tell when you're reacting that it's not going well for you, but I don't know what it feels like. And that's a starting point. I do not know what it feels like, but it hurts me to see you when you're not doing well. So what can we do? How can we make this better? Because the one reason, and we have, many movement disorder docs come on here and talk. They become movement disorder docs. That's the specialists in neurology that look after Parkinson's patients because they know it's one of the few practices with these kind of chronic illnesses that they know they can help you, your person and you, to be better. There are options, So don't discount that fact. There are options, but you may have to take the lead. And this goes back to many conversations we've had over time, too, of trying to get a HIPAA release form signed so that you can speak freely with the doctor on your person with Parkinson's behalf. And so take some steps toward that. We have information on that as well, because you are a partner in this. And it's hard. It's especially hard for children of adult children of a person with Parkinson's who are grappling with this and used to having their parent be the boss. And, the parent might be trying to put on too good of a show for them. So lots of resources out there. And I hope that some of that helps. Polly, what else?
We have a couple questions. One has been asking, Lisa's been asking, why don't men go out and make their own connections? She says, I have church, I have book club, I have quilting, but he only socializes when I do. Is that a gross generalization or is that a Parkinson's thing, do you think?
I think it's a constant. Most women have that complaint that they're the ones in charge of making all the social arrangements and the men just follow along.
However, I do think it's important to keep those doors open. And so, for example, Davis was at boxing for people with Parkinson's today. And I always encourage that because it's a community of like-minded people. And, he likes to help others and they like to help him and they all understand each other. And it's a good space to be, So if you can seek out, if they're willing to keep getting out there with other people, that helps. They don't have to be people with Parkinson's. But I think it is a little more challenging for men. Kathleen, you might be able to speak to that because you probably see that more. But I think socially, the women do tend to control the calendar, so to speak.
I think we're going to see a change in generation with that real soon. I think that the incoming group of people with Parkinson's is probably going to be different. And I think that probably generationally we're still dealing with folks who have more traditional roles in families. And so that may be a little bit different. As you were sitting here talking, I was going through all the support groups that I run, and actually the vast majority of people coming to our support groups are men. And so I found that very, very interesting as I was doing a slight, a tally, in my head of people with Parkinson's versus, men versus women. So, I think it just depends. But I do think that we're probably still dealing with a generation that's just, that just has a little bit more what we would consider traditional, although tradition is changing, traditional roles and have spent more time doing other things.
And I think they don't know how to ask for help sometime. And then their friends, longstanding friends, don't know how to give help when if they just realized, if you like tennis and you're sitting on the couch watching tennis together, if you can no longer play, then that's helping because you can get out of the house, and it's building rapport, right?
I think we all have to redefine how we think about help, and what we think, where we find meaning in some of this kind of respite or relief, even if you're the individual with Parkinson's. I mean, I think that that's, I think that's important. But I think we do have to, there are people just more hardwired to not be joiners or to not ask for help and to not
Sure.
understand, what that's like. There's also huge, when it comes to asking for help and you're a person, well, I guess even if you're a care partner, there's a huge admission, what you think is an admission of not being good enough or not being well enough or not being strong enough or not being capable enough. And that's a huge obstacle that, that's a different topic for a different day, because I think we could fill a whole hour on that, but.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's so spot on. And Polly, I don't think that's too big of a question. Go ahead, ask
Well,
it.
there's a big question for the end of our gathering here, but Joe asks, is there ever a time for a caregiver to give up?
Yep.
Why do you say that, Kathleen? Why do you say that so quickly?
I mean, I think it's, well, I say that, and yet at the same time, it doesn't really feel like giving up. I think that it's very difficult. The amount of sweat equity that you put into being a care partner, the amount of intellectual equity, the amount of emotional equity that you're putting into things. But I will say that there have been plenty of times in my life, in my professional life, where I have, where I've encouraged care partners to walk away because they're doing more harm than they are good to the individual with Parkinson's and how they're coping and how they're living on their daily life with things. People are entitled. We are all entitled to make poor decisions. There's accountability and responsibility that comes along with that. But if, as a care partner, someone is doing more damage to you, or you're doing more damage to them, then that is the time where it's okay to say, I can't be in this space with you, for you or for me. And it doesn't have to be, that does not have to be like okay, this doesn't work for you and it doesn't work for me. But if you are, if you are in that scenario, Parkinson's is hard enough. If you are living it with a partner that doesn't want to be there, and that isn't, we all have challenges, we all have limitations, we all have flaws, and imperfections. But if you are truly living with someone who just is doing more harm than they are good, and vice versa, if your care partner and the person that you're caring for is doing things that are dangerous or negative or difficult for you, that's when it's time to walk away.
This is
That
an
doesn't mean you
important
walk
thing.
away forever and ever and ever,
Yeah.
but maybe you do. Sorry,
Well,
go ahead.
Kathleen, thank you for this honest, extremely honest, and difficult response to articulate. And this is your permission, people, to know that you have choices and options, and you hopefully don't get to that point, but we're all human. And we're fallible, and we're all different. And so, yes, build your team, get people around you, encourage, meet new people that will, sometimes the best people that have helped me are people I met long after Davis was diagnosed with Parkinson's, in terms of being helpful, because the people that some of the people we knew from before can only see your person the way they used to be. And they can't get their mind around who they are now. Whereas when you meet people where you are now, it's just who you are. We've all changed, and that's so important. But my goodness, Kathleen, you're so full of wonderful, inspirational answers and honest answers. Thank you so much for being here with us. It's super helpful, super helpful. And the Houston area is lucky to have you, as
No,
are
not as lucky as I am to have them. And I mean that genuinely. This is the Parkinson's community locally, but also nationally and probably, internationally, as Polly and I have kind of come to know folks, is just pretty extraordinary.
it's extraordinary, right? So that's your cue right there, everyone, to make sure you're reaching out to those people out there that have walked this walk and understand it, like Gail. our wonderful Gail. Thank you so much for being here, Gail, and sharing with us.
Don't forget, you'll remember all the bad things, all the screw-ups. So take some time, hold your person's hand. So that is one of the memories you'll be able to add to it and appreciate that person. Sit down, hold their hand, watch TV together, so you can add that memory to all the other memories that you'll beat yourself up for.
So wonderful, Gail. I hope everyone has a great holiday and into the new year. We'll be right at back at it, like right after New Year's Day, I think. What day is our next one?
Be back on Tuesday, January 2nd,
Yes.
with Bonnie mentioned with Dr. Al Condoleezza talking about loneliness and social isolation. And
And his father had Parkinson's, and he is just a wonderful font of information as well. So, again, your community is growing just by showing up here. Thank you so much for showing up and for being part of this. We're so grateful for you in this time of gratitude. Get your journals out. Keep breathing. See you next month.